The Around the NFL podcast is now 75% Patriots fans.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
I can tell you what. You guys could root for your Pats in your beautiful little January and February, as long as the audience knows who that 25% is, the old Zeuser.
Well, I don't agree with the sentiment to begin with.
I do. You guys were all. You guys enjoy great football. You enjoyed them winning the Super Bowl last year, and
not pretty.
You know, you're already turning your back potentially on the team of ATL. So if they happen to lose this weekend, then you can go back to the Pats, Mark says.
I just like carrying that water, Dan.
You do. You carry it up and down that hill. This is the Around the NFL podcast sponsored by Scott Trade, a great company for all your needs in the financial world.
Nailed it. Seems like you've been doing some research on that.
I'm digging in a little bit on the old Scott Trade. Good dude. Good product. Today's show is our blowout championship Sunday preview. Digging in big time to the New England Patriots. Throne of sleaze at Denver Broncos. And, of course, the Arizona Cardinals against the Carolina Panthers. Almost forgot who was playing in the game. I don't know how that could have happened.
Breaking
news. So we'll talk about those games in depth. And we will also, because we haven't done it since the beginning of the season, we'll throw out some sandwich props.
Wow.
Go get my lunch, foul demon.
Ooh, I like that one.
Yeah,
it's the first time we've ever added some sandwich props before we've even passed out the previous sandwiches. Puts Dan at risk here because he was the winner really among the regular season. We were all kind of even, and Dan is.
I told you my kryptonite is once we get to draft season, don't know a damn thing. But I have a whole new strategy for that coming up this spring to protect myself from another bloodbath. But I'm still confident about the sandwiches right now. So we got that coming up.
Not sure I want a foul demon touching a sandwich I would be about to eat.
Why?
You're not about to eat any sandwich.
Well, I mean, let's just say whatever type of food I'd put in my mouth, a foul demon, like mixing it up with his hands before I eat it, sounds a little bit suspicious.
There was a funny part going back to the dinner with the Sesslers, Ed and Babs, where since Mark was, the son that was there and Ed and Babs were paying, but there was this moment where it was like Mark had the menu and he was going to maybe take the lead to order the appetizers. But then everyone, including Mark, knew like this was the oddest scenario ever that Mark would order for everyone because he hates food.
I don't hate food, but appetizers were like, it was like 19 out of 20 were like roast pig tongue.
Right.
So it was like, you guys eat that. I don't know.
That wasn't even one of 20.
Yes, Cheesecake Factory known for its daring inventive.
Well,
so many problems with this proposition thing. One, Mark, you would have to win. You would have to win one. And then two, yes, you would have to eat food.
Well, I'm tied. I think I'm like 41 and 41. So I've won some.
Yeah, you're even Sessler.
Let's not get haughty quite yet.
This show is also
first use of haughty since Casey at the bat.
Because the show is sponsored by Scott Trade. We are on YouTube. This program, the Thursday show, as well as the Sunday wrap-up show, both on YouTube, so you check that out. I believe it's on NFL Now as well, right, Greg?
Who really knows?
Yeah, but it's definitely on YouTube. So make sure you track it down. And we'll also, before we get into the games, talk a little news. And to do that, we will bring in our good friend and colleague, wearing a nice blue dress today, all dressed up. Do you go to Disneyland or something today?
No, that's
Sydney.
Actually, that's tomorrow. But I'm working a basketball game tonight.
What do you do when you work a basketball game?
Are you like the stat guy for
referee
for Brandon?
power forward.
Brandon at Cal State Fullerton.
He's the announcer for the Cal State Fullerton girls volleyball team. I don't know.
Is that true?
That's the it's the girls basketball.
I didn't know that.
And the men's. Yeah.
Wow.
He's trying to break into the talent.
All right.
Kind of a big deal.
Brandon's been doing this for multiple sports for a long time.
Yeah, he does.
Well, next time Brandon's behind the glass, we're going to dig in on that. I remembered covering some girls volleyball in high school, and they would send you out. I used to work, I don't know if I've said this on the podcast, I probably have, but Ian Rappaport and I worked together part-time at this newspaper in New York when we were out of college. And they would send you to events occasionally, and you'd have no idea how to cover the sport. Like, I grew up in a town that had no lacrosse, and I'd get sent to boys' lacrosse matches and have no idea what was going on. The worst ever. Volleyball is another one. It's like, oh, nice dig. What?
Well, you know, clearly you one of you made copy. A career out of it.
Well, you write about it, and you obviously you hope no one that actually knows the sport is reading about it. Everything's got to be a human interest angle or you're banged. Wrestling was another one. Oh, my God. What? That was a nightmare. And the worst by far is when they sent me up to upstate New York. I think it was Binghamton. It was like a four-hour drive to cover the diving championships where the Suffren Mounties had this great diver. And it was like, oh, what a great dive by Johnny Murray. I was like, I don't know how do I write about this?
Yeah, the rap sheet on the same newspaper?
We were.
It's like
yeah.
the Boston Globe in the late 70s.
Yeah, it was. It was really we actually had a fun, maybe next time he's on the show, we'll talk about it, a fun weekend at Syracuse covering the sectional boys baseball playoffs.
The first television thing I ever covered was a high school closed circuit cable station. Had me and someone else named Chris Sprague, a listener of this podcast,
Sprago.
Cover a 5-hour gymnastics event.
I did that once.
I mean, that's stretching. Within 40 minutes, we both realized we were in a lot of trouble.
Track and field's another one. Did you ever cover an indoor track and field, like massive all-day event, and you don't know anything about anything?
Or even a baseball game back then when there's no scoreboard and you're trying to announce, you have no idea what's happening.
Well, it's a scorecard there. That was easy.
Well, that was not my skill, so.
All right. Let's get back on track, and let's do some news.
I've heard you described as extremely intelligent, but sometimes antisocial and borderline crazy.
I sit on fire with the news drops lately. Yes, Chip Kelly was announced as the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers in a press conference on Wednesday. You know, it was a press conference that was interesting on a number of levels. Kelly, of course, trying to be human, being one of the things that was interesting, wearing a suit, looking very uncomfortable, answering questions from a Bay Area media group that seemed openly suspicious of him. I'll put it that way. And Kelly trying to, you know, pass himself off as someone that not only is he a football guy, which he said multiple times during the press conference, but he was blown away by the quote-unquote synergy within the 49ers front office, which is not something we've heard a lot of. So Chip Kelly announces the 19th head coach of the 49ers. Guys, I would think the thing that jumps out, of course, to all of us is will Kelly be able to get along with that front office, and then will he be able to save Colin Kaepernick and or Wes Blaine Gabbert? He didn't answer any questions about the quarterback citing CBA rules.
Yeah, he didn't really answer much of anything. Whereas in Philadelphia, the Doug Peterson opening press conference was vaguely antagonistic. This was openly antagonistic from the media for an introductory press conference, which is usually just like, rah, rah, like we're going to get excited. Let's welcome in the new coach. And it's just not going to be that type of situation in San Francisco. And I don't think Kelly's going to make it any better just with the way he is. I don't think that's his fault. He's not going to pretend to be someone else. But the one thing I found interesting was he was not saying he made mistakes in Philadelphia. He was saying basically how things went in Philadelphia, there were reasons for that, and he doesn't necessarily regret them at all, and that's the way he's going to do things. So all this stuff about has Chip Kelly learned, I think that's a little overrated. I think it's basically can Chip Kelly's way of doing things work? Maybe it can. I'm not closed-minded to that, but I don't think he's going to change.
Here's the Chip Kelly in a nutshell quote from the press conference. I'm not governed by the fear of what other people say. You have to believe. You have to have belief and conviction in what you're doing.
Well, I've read an essay from him that dates back years, and he had a similar quote. I mean, these coaches carry these things with them a long way, and I don't think you're going to get the flipped-around new version of Chip Kelly within 3 weeks of being fired from his last job. That probably will come if he ever verbalizes anything next season, down the road, when things have changed. But the idea that we're going to get this new and improved Chip Kelly, he tried to make a joke or two, totally fell flat. He's not that guy.
One joke. Let's hear it right now, actually.
I've been known to run a really slow offense. And I wanted to just kind of set the tone for how things are going to be here in San Francisco.
He was referring to the idea of why his press conference took so long to happen. He got announced, or not announced, but they chose him as coach last Thursday. And then he gave, that was after the joke, not a very funny joke.
No.
And then he gave a more detailed explanation why it took so long for the presser, which is a weird question in general. People are hung up on it, and he had an even weirder answer.
No, actually, I was offered the job last Thursday afternoon. I had no clothes. Just had a pair of sweats. Trent had visited me with Jed, and when I was in New Hampshire, they asked me to come back out, and you know, I asked him kind of what's the deal, and he said, just jump on a plane, so I did.
Okay. And then he said his dad turned 87 last Saturday, and he wanted to be home for that. He should have just led with
that. Well, that's more feasible.
That would have been fine. Telling us
about it. Right, because I believe there are clothing stores in the Bay Area.
It was a bizarre thing to say.
I'm just saying.
I think he's
buy some clothes.
I think he really does troll the media a little bit. Like, because he purposely made the bad joke, I think, and then talked about the no clothes thing, which is a weird thing to say. And then he said, oh, and also my dad's 87, and I wanted to be at his birthday on Saturday. Like, he let all that other stuff out first just to kind of mess with the media. It's going to be a beautiful situation with Tim Kamakwamy and everyone else up there.
Do you know who else isn't governed by anybody else's stamp of approval? Both of the coaches in last year's Super Bowl, Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll.
Oh, here we go.
I'm just saying, but both of those guys, Pete Carroll didn't have his football epiphany until he was in his 50s. Bill Belichick had to learn from failure. And I think Greg's point is Chip Kelly isn't saying that he learned from failure. And he's supposed to be this original thinker who isn't dogmatic and isn't just stuck in his ways. He's supposed to approach these things from new angles. And it doesn't sound like he's doing that.
Well, it doesn't sound like he's willing to share that with reporters. Now, we have no idea who he is behind the scenes, but this is not a guy that ever wants to tell reporters really anything, so I don't expect to hear it in a press conference
and
necessarily.
There's some talk in San Francisco before this marriage even begins that Jed York wanted the big name and Trent Baalke wanted a guy that was going to get along with him and that could execute Trent Baalke's vision. And basically, Jed York got his way. You know,
that's a great start.
Right, exactly, which is just something to watch out for.
Yes, this will be fun to track as long as it lasts. Moving on, let's talk a little bit about the Chargers. Of course, the Rams, it became official last week. They're moving to Los Angeles next year. And the Chargers have the option until next January to decide whether they want to join the Rams in L.A. in that building or that new facility that will be built in West L.A. Now, the Chargers have filed, according to the L.A. Times, have applied to trademark Los Angeles Chargers and L.A. Chargers. That was just 2 days after the vote was made to move the Rams to L.A., so this is not looking good. And in other news, Philip Rivers said he was nauseated by the thought of a move to San Diego.
To Los Angeles.
Oh, actually, he said the Raiders to San Diego.
I got you.
Right. So the idea of not only, you know, who knows what happens with the Chargers, but the idea of the Raiders moving and taking their spot makes him nauseous, which I could totally understand. I feel bad for all, you know, you think about, and even like Kurt Warner and Marshall Faulk and Philip Rivers, if you take football out of these cities, for them from an individual standpoint, they kind of lose that connection at all to their careers. They kind of just become these guys that wander through the league and then have no home after that. You know, it's so many sad things about the movings, but this is one of them for me.
Have you found one person other than Dean Spanos, the Chargers owner, who wants the Chargers in L.A.? I know the Los Angeles mayor came out yesterday and basically said, stay in San Diego, we need a rival, we don't want you here.
Right, and I don't know if the NFL at this point I don't think they necessarily want it. I think the Chargers are just the victim of a situation that has no clear answer for them, that they are just the ultimate losers in all of this, and that I don't know what the good situation is because they don't fit here. But they don't fit in San Diego right now either while they're trying to move. If they have to kind of go back there with their tail between their legs but they still don't have a new stadium situation figured out, it's like – They're just kind of floating or out there. It's a bummer.
Moving on to the Buffalo Bills, who are the second team to be on the right side of some gender progress in the NFL. They have named Catherine Smith their quality control special teams coach. That announcement was made late Wednesday. Smith becomes the second female coach in the NFL. The Cardinals hired Jen Welter to serve as their training camp assistant coach this past summer, but that was only a training camp gig. Catherine Smith is the first full-time female coach, so that's a pretty big deal. She had worked as an administrative assistant under Rex Ryan with the Bills this year, had worked with the Jets for a number of years before that. So Smith getting a shot to actually climb the ladder, well, hopefully she does, and each step of the way will be groundbreaking if it happens.
Why not? I mean, it feels like within a couple of years, Bruce Arians was the first coach to come out and say, this can happen, and then he made it happen himself. And I think all accounts, the players responded to Jen Welter very well. She was a good coach. It wasn't some sort of token hire. She was qualified, and she grew in the role. You got to expand this out. I could see more and more teams doing it. At what point they start, well, that depends on what teams need. But, I mean, there's a lot of female coaches down the road that be qualified to do this.
I'm not sure if it opens up the floodgates for the next year or two, but what it does is young women – college age or high school age, it gives them something to look up to and know that it's possible to do it.
Well, it creates the path for it, and this is the path. She is a special teams quality control coach, so some sort of quality control coach. And I look at Catherine Smith in the same way that people probably looked at Bill Belichick and some of the guys he hired, like Mangini and McDaniels, who never really had big-time NFL. They never had any NFL experience. They barely had any college experience. But what they did was start at that level. The quality control, grinding tapes, doing everything possible, starting at the very bottom. And then after a while, you start showing these people when you're in the building that you're one of the smartest people there, and you move your way up slowly. Because, I mean, there was a lot, and there still is a lot of adversarial thoughts towards guys like McDaniels and stuff that clearly never played, you know, at
well, it's still
level.
An old boys club. I mean, right. Look at who That's got recycled and rehired this winter. It's people that utterly failed 2 months ago and have failed multiple times suddenly get a new job.
Maybe
it's
that's
the same group of
maybe
people.
Maybe Rex just felt the pressure. After you hired Rob Ryan, it's like you gotta let anyone in.
Gotta go.
If you can put up with Rex Ryan as his admin, you know, assistant for a couple of years, you can do this job.
I do have to give the NFL a little credit because it would probably be the last major professional sport that I would think would be making progress in this field. But instead, they seem to be trailblazing.
That's a good point.
So, you know. Good job, National Football League.
Way to go, Rex. We pick on Rex a little
bit.
No,
he deserves legit credit here. Good for him.
Mark, come on, find a negative. Go ahead.
No,
I just said she put up with him as his admin for 2 years. She obviously is resilient. She's skilled. She puts up with a lot of nonsense. So,
finally, in Carolina, listen, the Panthers are a former team around the NFL. We talk about, how can you turn your back on the team of ATN and pick against the Cardinals this weekend? Well, the Panthers are a special team in our history as well, right?
This is a matchup of two teams of around the NFL.
And, you know, as Wes will, you know, in a fiery manner contest, he never bought into the Chargers last
Nobody
year.
Did. You guys didn't even buy into the
Yeah, we did. Listen, they got the designation. Not every year do you really attach to a team, but the Panthers and Cards – the Panthers of 2013, the Cards of 2015. Yummy. And I'm all in on the Panthers this weekend. I guess I'm turning my back.
Yeah, I was going to say,
I have some loyalty.
I don't think we're all in on the Cardinals at all.
This is your heel turn.
I mean, we're spoiling it. Who cares about that? But with a couple people aren't even picking a team when it's basically even odds. It's not like they're big underdogs. You know, there is no attachment.
Let me get to my
it's
point.
It's all a phony thing.
You know what? Stop it. A phony thing. The Panthers have two players, Ben Jacobs, a linebacker, and tight end Greg Olsen, who everyone knows, who have gotten into a new thing. I love this team even more. It's called creed bombing, and I'm going to start doing it, guys. It's where you sneak up on your teammate or your colleague, and then you just belt out an inane creed lyric from yesteryear. You know, here's an example of what Ben Jacobs had to say: "Hold me now, I'm 6 feet from the edge of hunt again." Like just getting somebody's.
You're gonna start doing this now.
Oh yeah. Like I'll do one to Greg right now. Let me move in a little closer. Can you take me higher?
Terrifying.
It's horrible, right?
I hate the description in the article where he says you have to look directly into his eyes.
Well, that's Scott
that would
Stapp.
Scare Greg.
It just did.
Lead singer of Creed, Scott Stapp. It's the deep, you know, faux religious, like I'm looking into the eyes of you, but really Jesus H. Christ, and singing to your soul directly, kind of like this.
Wow.
With arms wide open.
This just makes me feel old.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Creed was – this was 15 years
ago.
Yeah,
but these guys are saying – Greg Olsen's like, this is the stuff we grew up listening to. I was already a formed adult when Creed was –
Yeah.
You were getting chased around by pit bulls in the Cincinnati Projects.
This is basically the Panthers white guy's response to dabbing. They're like, we need something. Let's go with Creed.
Well, they've had their hoverboards ripped away from them.
Why does it have to be viewed that way? Couldn't you imagine Cam Newton doing this at the 50-yard line at Super Bowl 50?
Cam Newton doesn't strike me as a Creed fan.
My sacrifice! Cam Newton just screaming, my sacrifice, to Terry Bradshaw? A stunned Terry Bradshaw?
For Wes and I, who sit roughly 4 or 5 feet from Dan,
oh, it's going to suck.
This is a really poor development.
Blame Greg Olsen
and Ben Jacobs.
Ben Jacobs play? Does he have a role on that team?
He's like backup special teamer.
But wacky locker room guy.
Mark, if you were in a locker room, you wouldn't want anything like that, anything kind of fun, wacky stuff.
Actually, quite the opposite. I think it'd be a totally different world. I love practical jokes.
But you sometimes, like in the office, you
I would love
get angry when
jokes.
People are talking and joking around you.
Well, if I'm in an NFL locker room, I don't have to like be writing 8 posts. I mean, I'd be in there just playing games and joking around. It's a different world.
You'd be like the Ryan Mallett of the locker room, just playing.
Floating from team to team.
Making your own ball games. Whatever, four square.
I think practical joking would be on a massive, huge team level.
Yeah.
Would be awesome.
Okay, that's what's happening in the news.
Dan's not buying it.
No.
Completely.
You would stew. You would stew. You'd be sitting on your stool looking at like a FedEx letter because you got fined for spearing someone, and you'd just be so angry. And then everyone else would be around you like dancing to like the weekend and stuff. And
I want to know how like a guy who's Kendrick like Lamar. Barely 5'8" has an active role and is spearing anyone on an NFL team. That itself would be, you know, a fantastic story.
All right. By the way, Mark, we had a discussion briefly on Tuesday's show about where Doug Peterson fell in the best looking coaches. And I got to be honest, I kind of moved on from the convo because I thought it was making Lindsay a little uncomfortable. Mm. So, but I also want to double back on, especially I got a tweet from a user at Patty1710, Fudson. If Doug Peterson is possibly in your top 5 hottest head coaches, I am intrigued to know who the top 3 are. This is more your department. So why don't you give us, Mark, your top 5 hottest coaches now that all the 7 spots have been filled and we have 32 coaches to choose from. Top 5 hottest, 5-1.
Well, I mean, let's start right here. We lost the shakeup, all the firings.
Yeah.
Took some talent out of the race because you lose Dan Campbell, who was probably number one for me.
Okay.
Very hot. Lovie Smith, attractive man. He's gone. Damn. Mike Pettine from sort of an action hero type of way.
You've always thought Mike Pettine's attractive. He looks like a big dumb animal.
Oh, what?
Well, that
Mark
is
has,
also
that
not
nice. Mark has strange taste here. He likes big muscle-bound men.
Bald men.
Bald men.
Are you a big Ving Rhames fan? Have you ever seen
Not
Pulp Fiction?
Really. I mean.
What's your favorite scene in Pulp
He's
Fiction?
He's basically describing Wes. That's the type of man he likes.
That's true.
That's an assumption.
Anyway.
So you're looking for my top 5
yeah,
hottest
top
coaches.
5. Okay.
All right, number 5 is
Wait,
a
do
tie.
Do we have a little drum roll? Do we have a little timpani?
Timpani?
Did we ever get the correct pronunciation on that?
It's timpani.
Timpani, thank you.
That's the jewelry company.
Let me dial it up here. Give me just a second.
One of my favorite things is to put Sydney on the spot.
She loves it too.
Yeah, I love it so much.
Big
okay,
way.
Here it is. We got
All right.
it.
All right. Consulted a little bit with a very handsome man, Handsome Hank, on this, by the way. So tied at number 5, we have Oakland's Jack Del Rio and Gus Bradley of the Jaguars.
You have no. Do you know how timpani works, by the way? That's for number 1, Sydney.
Oh,
goodness gracious! I'm just doing as I'm told.
By the way, old down the middle Sessler has to make his top 5 into top 6. He just can't bear to break Gus Bradley's.
That
heart.
Is.
I
even
had to squeak Gus Bradley in there.
All right, so Gus
got some great photos.
Also bald and Jack Del Rio.
The Jaguars always have to get the positive.
Shall we 4 John here?
Yeah, 4.
Okay, right. 4. Mike Tomlin, especially when he has the aviators visor look.
Okay.
Very, very strong. If you check that out. Number 3 is Doug Peterson.
Didn't an earlier draft of this have my boy Todd Bowles?
We had Todd Bowles in there, but I discussed with Henry, and Henry gave me some behind the scenes information that he's gained a lot of weight.
Yeah.
And that you have to look at the entire package, and it's not what it was last summer. So a little work to do on the Todd Bowles front.
Fat shaming.
Number 3?
No, that's not what
that is. Did Lindsay teach you nothing about fat shaming?
That's not fat shaming. He's not at his potential.
Okay, number 3.
Doug Peterson, number 3.
Ahead of Tomlin.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, again, it's just my opinion, Wes.
Okay.
Yours would be different. Number 2, Dallas Cowboys coach Jason Garrett.
That's a stunner.
No, that, I agree. He kind of looks like
that
Damian Lewis.
So hard.
The guy from
Homeland. That's where I bet if you're polling the average woman where your poll goes wildly off.
Well,
that's
I'm not
guess.
Discussing with women.
I'm with you on this one. I think women.
Thank you, Wes.
That's a ridiculous pick.
All right. Well, can we
the
finish?
The guy's a ginger.
He is.
Well, he's a good-looking
have you ever actually, if you meet him in person, though, he is someone that looks better, much better in person.
But sometimes it's right. also about the, you know, the confidence.
And now, number one, and Mark, give it, let it
all right.
roll.
Number one,
you
here
guys
comes
struggle
the drums.
With the timpani sometimes.
No. I have actually fought for this franchise to be deep sixth so we could build the old Mouser, but it is Baltimore's John Harbaugh.
Wow.
John Harbaugh's a handsome guy.
Chicks dig John Harbaugh.
Also, if you look at the list of coaches, you look like you have ate a sour lemon, Greg, but like if you look at the list of coaches, we're at a low point for attractive coaches. Mm. Can I give you one quote that handsome Hank gave me on Bill Belichick?
Yes, of course.
Because I, you know, he was arguing that Bill Belichick is a sexy beast, he told me, because of the power he wields.
Yeah.
Can I retort that with a quote of my own? From Connor Orr on Slack yesterday, I am sitting here watching Bill Belichick's press conference, staring at the pockets of fat in his jowls.
What's going on with the fat shaming? What about
that's what Connor said?
I don't
Slack.
Think that Belichick is Stop necessarily it. Fat for his age at all.
But I think what Dan's getting at, or the power thing that you were talking about, rather, I think that's the sort of intangible that Jason Garrett lacks, and I think John Harbaugh might lack.
Mark, maybe in the off season we can dig into the top five front office figures. Maybe somebody will make that list. I don't know.
Ladies and gentlemen, for one night only, Sashi!
Well, you talk about power being alluring. He does have power over the 53-man roster, which I think elevates him certainly from where he would have been in any previous time. So,
all
yes.
Right. There we go.
Sashi is he sort of an interesting candidate.
Let's there you go. So there's Mark. A trip into Mark's mind, always a fun journey. You never know where it will lead. Let's move on to the championship preview of the two games on championship Sunday. That's pretty good. That worked. So let's start. Let's go in order of the games, guys, and really have some fun with this. Dig in, and we'll start, of course, in Denver, where the Broncos, the number one seed in the AFC, a team that ended up stealing that number one seed from the Patriots, and the Patriots finished slow in December when they were dealing with some injury issues and what have you. But the Patriots team that beat the Chiefs this past weekend looked a lot more like the Patriot team that seemed to be potentially looking to threaten to go 16-0 again. So I'm sure as the Denver Broncos watched game tape, they got a little nervous at that prospect. These teams faced off once before in the regular season. It was a great Sunday night game, one of the best primetime games of the year. It was the game in which Rob Gronkowski suffered a knee injury, but survived it almost miraculously. And I believe that was the game that the Broncos won on a C.J. Anderson touchdown, right?
That's correct. They were down 14-0 in that game. They had a big fourth quarter comeback. It was really one of the games of the year. And then Brady got the game-tying drive without Gronk. That's a lot going on in that game.
Great game. So we get a rematch of that game. That's a lot of fun. The difference, of course, the big difference between those games, Brock Osweiler was the quarterback for Denver then, and now it's Peyton Manning, the sheriff, with one last chance against Tom Brady. Potentially, this could be it. The Kissing Cousins corner is of the opinion that the Patriots are going to roll no problem in this game. And I think a lot of people agree with Wes and Mark. I believe Greg and myself think this is going to be a real game. Let's start with you, Greg. Why do you think that the Broncos should not be overlooked in this game?
Because I give the Broncos the edge up front, really on both sides of the ball, especially when the Patriots have the ball. Now, Tom Brady can get rid of the ball so quickly that it's not a problem, but that's one of the things you noticed when you go back and watch that game. Everyone said, well, Edelman and Amendola, they weren't there. Well, neither was DeMarcus Ware. And the things that haven't changed are the lines. And Derek Wolfe ate the Patriots center's lunch throughout that game. Von Miller didn't have a huge game in week 12, but I think him and DeMarcus Ware present a lot of problems for the Patriots. The Denver running game, on the other hand, also did very, very well against the Patriots throughout that game. They run for 173 yards. It really picked up late. But when I watched it again this week on the coaches, if they didn't have Ronnie Hillman as their starter, if they have better running backs, they could have run for about 260. They were moving people, and that worries me. As a Patriots fan, that's the number one thing that worries me, is that the Broncos are going to have a consistent running game throughout the day, and that's why I think it's a really even matchup. If you've got a little bit of an edge up front on both sides of the ball, you're going to have a chance.
It's my belief and contention. It has been my belief. Once Julian Edelman, Danny Amendola, and Rob Gronkowski all got healthy, you're going to see the Patriots from September through mid-November. And I think that's exactly what we saw against the Chiefs. I think they're going to roll. And it's also my belief and contention that the Broncos were a dominant defense in the first half of the season compared to the 2000 Ravens. Other great defenses, they have not been that defense.
That's fair.
Over the past 2 months. And with Chris Harris playing with one arm and the Patriots being a run-after-the-catch team, this is a horrible matchup for the Broncos.
Well, you're exactly right, though. When they have Amendola, Gronk, and Edelman, they're 10-0 this season. And Denver's defense gave up some big plays last week.
Yep.
I mean, I could see that happen again. New England did not throw deep, what, once all game?
They threw it over 15 yards three times. And what you said for the passing game is true, Wes, but I don't think you can just ignore the fact that the team in September and October had Deion Lewis and LeGarrette Blount, and now if they make it to the Super Bowl, this might be the worst team that ever made it to the Super Bowl in terms of running the ball.
Well, it will be.
They have no running game. It is the worst Patriots running game I've ever seen. And it's actually worse than the statistics.
Who was playing so great at running back the last time these two teams met?
No one. I mean, you had LeGarrette Blount.
And the Patriots controlled that game until a bad punt return and Rob Gronkowski.
If you rewatch that game,
that's not
the
true.
Patriots
they got outgained by 175 yards.
They were in complete control.
It's just a weird thing to cite when the Patriots didn't win the game, that's all.
And
right, but you realize that a random weird punt return because their punt returner was injured.
Dude, that's football.
And then Gronk getting
hurt. It
doesn't
matter.
But
it's football.
But you can't cite that because they're not the same team.
If they had a better running game, they probably could have closed the game.
They beat a horribly banged up Patriots team, which is materially different than the Patriots team now.
But I think a lot of what I see, that those teams haven't changed. And I think when I watched it, I got this. It didn't feel like an uneven game. The Patriots defense started out well. It was a field position game where they took advantage of two really short fields. I mean, one of the Patriots touchdowns, they started the ball at the 10. The other one, they started the ball at the 40. So they made some big plays in special teams and defense. And it wasn't like the Patriots looked like a superior team. When you get outgained by 160 yards and 80 of your yards is on a nice pass to a running back, that was James White, who had a 80-yard touchdown in that play, it didn't feel like these are two uneven teams. I think they're two really good teams. My whole case is that the Broncos are a legitimate top five team, that they belong to be here in this weekend. That's my only argument. I think the Patriots are a great team.
My feeling, at least in this group, and tell me if I'm wrong, Wes and Mark, is that you guys believe that the Broncos are a good team, but you believe at this stage Peyton Manning is such a liability that it's going to lead this game single-handedly being lopsided.
I believe what I said 5 minutes ago, that the defense isn't dominant anymore and that Peyton Manning is a liability. When you combine those two teams, I don't think they're a top-five team. I think they got lucky to play a really banged-up Steelers team, and that's why they're here.
I don't know about lopsided, but I do believe that New England will win and it won't resemble the game they played 2 years ago in the AFC Championship. And the big difference is that the quarterback has changed for Denver. Now, statistically, Manning and Osweiler aren't starkly different by the end of Osweiler's run. But I guess for me, watching Denver last week, I just found that dull offense very limiting. And I know we've had disagreements about that, but I believe that Brady brings so much to New England.
Oh,
he can still absolutely almost win a game on his own, but he doesn't have to because he has Edelman back. They've got their wide receivers back. They've got a passing game again. They're limited as a running team, but I just look at New England as the better team overall.
I agree. My big question, no one seems to be talking about it this week, is what are we getting out of Jamie Collins and Chandler Jones? Jamie Collins did not play the second half of that game last week. Chandler Jones was injured and ineffective in that game, in and out of the game. That is not a small thing to consider. Those are two really of the three key players on the defense, along with Dante Hightower, who is playing outstanding. He right now is the best player on their defense.
What's the update on Jamie Collins?
They had a walkthrough on Wednesday, and I think that was a reflection of what I talked about after last week's game. The 89 plays, I think, has Belichick freaked out. I have never seen them do a walkthrough on a Wednesday. They are basically almost taking this week pretty light in practice, I think, to get everyone healthy. They were at the walkthrough, but I don't know what.
Don't forget our boy, best defensive free agent signing of the offseason, Jabal Sheard.
Oh, Jabal Sheard.
It's been great.
I love him. I love Jabal Sheard.
So we know the Broncos aren't playing as good on defense in recent weeks. Peyton Manning obviously is not close to the same player he used to be. What is a weakness on the Patriots side of the ball other than the running game that maybe the Broncos can exploit?
I look at their offensive line. I mean, yes, you know, when they talk about all these combinations that they've done, some of them are just earlier in the year were inventive. I mean, it's things they do with their line. But they lost when they lost Brian Storck last week. If they lose one or two guys, you've got issues. And it's what, the third most sacks that Brady's taken in his career was this season. So you put the pass rushing power of Denver against this line, that's trouble potential.
The problem, though, if you're Denver, is that Brady gets the ball out so quickly.
That's what they do. The quick passing game absolutely worked.
If it really, it would have to be a tandem effort with the Denver secondary locking down those receivers near the line of scrimmage. But here's the thing. I mean, I'm sure they, you know, we got Son of Bum up there in Denver, right? You know,
when they put it on,
I'm sure he's
last
scheming
week,
that. I
mean,
they
saw it.
I wouldn't be surprised if Phillips had a scheme that could work here. I don't know if the Patriots are going to score a lot of points in this game. I know maybe the Broncos defense isn't as good, but I do trust in the defense and the coordinator, and I do think that this game is going to be relatively low scoring. That's my prediction.
Brian Stork had a big problem with Derek Wolf the last time they played. Derek Wolf had a great game. That contract they just gave him is going to look like a bargain. He just absolutely destroyed the Steelers, too. So that's where I have the problems. Now, Denver
Stork
has a lot of
playing, or is
it's again, he's limited.
They've got a good backup.
He returned to the game.
He
came back to the game last week. So, again, another key player. I think if Denver is going to make a case, it's just that their overall talent is really good. I mean, they have a lot of players on both sides of the ball. Demaryius Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders, Aqib Talib, Von Miller, DeMarcus Ware. It's just like a lot of guys who can make a play, and you got the coaching and the quarterback are obviously huge advantages for the Patriots.
I totally agree that the Broncos have the talent, and you look at their defense and wonder why they haven't been dominant for the past couple of months. DeMarcus Ware's injury is part of that. And I really think the Chris Harris injury is huge. He got picked on last week.
And Edelman is the guy in theory he would be covering, which is
the game now. Mark, you start us off.
This is going to be – I don't agree with lopsided. I do think New England's going to win, and it's going to be 28-18 in an interesting game, New England Patriots.
I feel like we do this a lot. I've got Patriots 27-17. I'm always point off.
That means I'm sweating it out in the fourth quarter, probably.
What happened to the old quarterback that should be in a retirement home? All of a sudden this game is going to be close,
they
have a bad defense.
They score 17 points.
10 points close.
What am I missing?
I think you're also –
the Broncos have a terrible defense and a quarterback that should be eating tapioca.
27-17 is a comfortable win.
I didn't say they have a terrible defense, first of all. And so you got – you know, Dan, you're painting us into a corner.
44-3.
That's what I'm going to say. If you talk like that, you might as well throw out a score like
27-26.
Why don't you listen to what we've said? You're telling us how we feel, and I actually think the 28-18 is not that close. You lost by 10 points at home.
I like the tribute that you stuck them with the number 18, his uniform number.
Didn't even try to, but
nice
I like
tribute.
It.
The Patriots will win this game. I try to talk myself into the Broncos stealing it. I couldn't quite do it. I would love to see it happen, of course. But I think in a close game, a defensive battle, it will be a 17-14 New England win.
Yeah, I've got a very similar type of game, 20-17, Patriots win it. And I think their defense will make some plays.
It's in Denver, and I think that's a big deal.
What's the weather looking like?
It's looking warm. There's an outside chance there could be some precipitation.
Precip.
But it's probably in the low 50s or in the middle of the 40s. It's not.
That's good for Manning.
Yeah, it's not
going to
be a cold game.
Don't throw your big weatherman words around us. Precipitation. How about rain? How about snow and sleet?
Well, but they're not sure. They're not sure. You never know. Might get cold as the night comes in. Might change. A little wintry mix.
It's a CYA move that you have to do when you're a weatherman.
Yeah, that's true. All right, let's move on to the late game. This will kick off at 6:40. The Arizona Cardinals, yes, the team of Around the NFL. A beautiful season they're having, and coming off that wonderful game on Saturday night, the win over the Packers in overtime. Now they survive that, and they head to Carolina to face the Panthers. And the Panthers have been on a glorious run for four straight months. They are now 16-1. They are undefeated at home this season. they hung a 31 burger on.
That's not a burger.
Listen, and you do it in one half, it is a big old burger.
Okay,
on the defending
that.
Super Bowl or conference champions two times running. Yes, their butts got tight in the second half, and they probably shouldn't have done that, and they ended up winning only by 7 points. But the point was made at that point that the Panthers were the better team, and they just dominated that game when it mattered, and now they get the Cardinals. So here we go, guys. Wes, I'll start with you on this. This, to me, and I think a lot of people will agree, is the game of the day if you have to choose between them. Two great teams. I think the winner of this game will have a good chance to be the Super Bowl favorite once the guys in the desert chime in, maybe Spice Rack. Your thoughts on this game, Wes?
Feels like we've been on a collision course for this game all year. The last three Coach of the Year awards in this game, 28 combined regular season wins between the two teams, are the most by two playoff teams since 2004. This will be the first postseason game of the Super Bowl era with two teams averaging 30 points a game.
Wow.
And then they rank first and second in total points, point differential, takeaways, points off of takeaways. These have been the two best teams in the NFL all year.
And the two best quarterbacks along with Tom Brady. That's probably why Peyton Manning sticks out so much, is you got the three best all season. And, oh, by the way, you have two of the best defenses of the year all season. And that I'm kind of wondering who's going to be more aggressive, I guess would be the way I would put it, because in theory – Carolina likes to get creative. They're not afraid to blitz, and they did it a little bit against Seattle last week, and at times it burned them. They got, you know, defenders behind them, and that's what I'd be worried about if I was Carolina this week, when you have Robert McCain is playing every snap. Courtland Finnegan is playing every snap. Kurt Coleman got injured in week 17, and he has had his worst two games of the season back-to-back. If they had blown that lead, he would have been probably the biggest reason why. And he's been a big asset to them throughout the year. And that's why I think this matchup is terrible for Carolina. Because if they have any weakness as an entire team on either side of the ball, they don't really have a great natural outside pass rush. And now they're a little thin in the secondary. And what team, if you give them a little time, can throw it deep any better than Cam Newton? I mean, than Carson Parr. Probably the only answer is Cam Newton. These are the two best vertical throwing teams in the entire league.
Well, he may have to. I mean, what happened over the last couple of weeks to Arizona's ground game, I think it is a concern, because you ask Arians why it happened 67 total yards on the ground in week 17 in the wild card game combined, and he basically said it. We got our ass kicked up front. And so now you have to deal with star Luda Lely and Kaon Short. I mean, that right there is one of the best tandems in the league. And if you can't get the run game going on the road here, I'd be a little concerned about it's all on Carson Palmer at that point. And it can't be the Carson Palmer we saw for three quarters of last week.
These are the two matchups to watch. 30 straight games of 100 yards for the Panthers, the most since the mid-70s Steelers on the ground. And they have, I mean, we used to pick on Mike Shula, but they've got, I heard Brian Baldinger say that no offensive coordinator has crafted his offense around one player as well as Mike Shula has around Cam Newton. And Cam is the key to the running game because of his ball handling and his tricks and his fakes. And then on the other side of the ball, like Greg said, the Panther secondary. And you've got three really good wide receivers for the Cardinals. That is a huge advantage for Arizona.
I love John Brown to have a big game here, or Larry Fitzgerald could too. You got Courtland Finnegan maybe on him, but John Brown, who's sometimes playing from the slot, gets up the middle of that defense. If I'm a Panthers fan, that's the thing that would worry me more than anything.
I think Jerry Rice might disagree, but I have a note here in our 2015 season conference championship research notes. In eight career playoff games, Larry Fitzgerald has averaged 114 receiving yards per game and scored 10 touchdowns. That's in eight games. He's the only player in NFL history, a minimum three games, to average 100-plus receiving yards and one-plus touchdown per game in the playoffs. That is the guy you want to go to war with in January. Marron!
Let me give you an asterisk that makes that stat even more impressive. That includes last year's game with Ryan Lindley, who only had 70-something yards of total offense.
Wow. we should throw that game out, like, totally
yes,
from society.
I think that'd be fair.
It never happened.
Never happened.
I was surprised looking through this research notes this week, the research packet. I'm not gonna raise it up or anything. What did you say?
No, did you?
That would be slightly derivative anyway.
Like, check with me before, like.
What, I have to check with you before I read?
Pillaging my research
read
notes?
Read through it. This is for the entire NFL network. It's distributed around the
Dan
company.
Dan doesn't know that.
I'm not aware of that.
It's not just for Dan Hansen.
I thought Jeff Greenholz and his team just made it for me.
No, look at this. You're not the only one. I can lift it up.
Oh, stop.
Anyone.
It.
No, where's the
yeah,
music?
No drop, bro.
No one's going to give me.
No drop, bro.
I was really
no pop.
Surprised when I read this year Cam Newton, 9 touchdowns, 1 interception when he's throwing the ball over 25 yards. By far the best in the league. Carson Palmer actually had more interceptions than touchdowns on those vertical throws, which was very surprising because I think of Carson Palmer as that's his thing, that he's always going to be aggressive and he hits more low percentage throws than just about anyone. But if you combine those numbers and consider the fact that Ted Ginn has dropped more deep passes than any player in the league, it is really remarkable the type of season that Cam Newton's having. And I'm going to pick the Cardinals in this game, but if the easy argument for the Panthers, I mean, there's a lot of things. They're just a great team. But this is an epic guy having an epic season. He's at home. He's the best, you know, running quarterback of all time. He's having an unbelievable year throwing. And he could just be an all-time great that's going to have an all-time great and
20,
take out the
Cardinals.
Yeah,
he's 22 Cardinals. Touchdowns and 1 pick over his last 9 games. He's one of the best quarterbacks
throwing
this season against the blitz.
And it's
so
the year.
Throwing 5 rushing touchdowns over that span,
throwing
too.
5 rushing touchdowns.
Guys, just, that's all from my research notes. Did you guys take this off my desk?
Your
that's
research notes.
Yeah.
Well, but you know that he's been building that. It's not he's been
sure,
building
sure.
that for weeks and weeks. And they Patrick Peterson said it that this is they went had you go from dealing with Aaron Rodgers last week to a completely different type of quarterback where he had 3 rushing yards last week, Cam Newton. But the idea that it could happen at any time is so such preoccupies your defense to such a degree that it's a major nuisance.
And you could say that for literally whoever they were playing last week. Seeing Cam Newton the next week, there's nobody like the guy. He's an absolute beast. And, you know, here's the difference between these two quarterbacks, whereas, and maybe I'm a little more hung up on it than others, but while I was genuinely a little freaked out by Carson Palmer's performance last week, I have seen no hints that in this special season, like Greg's saying, that Cam Newton is going to let down in this spot, in his building. If the game's on the line and he has a chance to lead his team to win, it's hard for me to picture him falling short unless something crazy happens, you know, whether it's an injury or, you know, some fluky special teams or defensive, like a ball gets tipped. I just think this is Cam Newton's season, and as great as the Cardinals are, and I respect them as the team of ATN, the Panthers, to me, this has been a special season all year long, and I can't pick against them.
I think that's a fair assessment to be more confident in the Panthers because of Cam Newton's level of absolute confidence and that Carson Palmer didn't show that. Bruce Arians admitted that Palmer had nerves. Palmer admitted that Palmer had nerves, and of course you worry about that a little bit.
And when you look at the Panthers' defense, I picked on some of the negative things about it, but the reality is right now they have the best defensive tackle still alive in the playoffs. They have the best linebacker still alive in the playoffs, Luke Kuechly. And, you know, you could argue Patrick Peterson or Josh Norman, but they have a cornerback that is playing dominant for them. You know, I don't know who – it's not like he's going to just
I'll
cover
take Peterson
one guy.
Over Norman.
You know, that's a tough call. But you know what I'm saying is they have top-level players at every level.
I think this isn't the best matchup for Norman. Because the Cardinals are so – they have that embarrassment of riches. You can't – Norman's not going to – he's not going to trail Fitzgerald into the slot because that's not what he does. And if you put him on Michael Floyd, John Brown is going to burn people deep, and Fitz is going to burn Finnegan. You only have – basically, you have Josh Norman and a bunch of questions.
Well, that's been the issue with every team trying to deal with the Cardinals, and that's why their scoring offense is off the charts because – they're overload. They're an overload situation on every defense.
I think we do have some sound, I believe, of Bruce Arians talking about their troubles up front, which you alluded to before. And I think that's something that has to be a concern with the way K'Juan Short and star Lotulelei played last week. Why don't we take a listen to that, Sid?
Getting our ass kicked up front. And it's not anything David's doing or just not a lot of holes there. And we got to do a better job. And it's a tough challenge this week.
They got the better running back in this game, David Johnson. I'd rather have him than Jonathan Stewart any day, and yet he's done nothing the last couple of weeks, and it's not just the run game. I mean, the Packers went blitz crazy at Arizona for three quarters of that game, and they had no answer for it. A lot of that game, when I rewatched it, I didn't think it was quite as much on Carson Palmer as I thought, because there was a lot, there were a lot more plays where he just had to get rid of the ball really quickly because the Packers sent stuff that they just had no answer.
Why are you disrespecting Jonathan Stewart? He ran for 1,000 yards
Jonathan
in 12
Stewart.
Games in the regular season, think, put 100 on the Seahawks.
Greg and I are charter members of the Jonathan Stewart.
Yeah, that's why I'm surprised
club.
To hear that.
And I agree with him that David
well,
Johnson
he's just
is
saying
better.
David Johnson's better than Stewart.
I had,
I'm
as a
surprised
receiver,
about that.
What he does as a receiver cannot be discounted.
I once foolishly said, you know, draft Jonathan Stewart with your number six pick in your fantasy league back in 10 years ago. I love Jonathan Stewart. I love he's having
humble brag.
I think that David Johnson is one of the six or seven best running backs in the league right now. I think he's that good in terms of his overall skill set.
Can I just cycle back to Josh Norman a second? Because it does feel like he hasn't been necessarily the same guy. And I checked out Pro Football Focus. And their numbers, at least, if you like their metrics, back it up. Through week eight, he was essentially the number one cornerback in football. But from week nine on, he's been basically, in terms of their grading, an average-type cornerback. He got shredded by the Giants and Odell Beckham and got lucky for it not to be worse. He didn't play great against Julio Jones the next week. And he's been not been putting up great numbers, really, or in terms of you study the tape. So maybe he's not the same player that he was back in October and November, and that's something to think about, too.
Well, he was playing better early in the year. I don't think that makes him anything close to an average player. He's still a very good cornerback. I just think the Cardinals, it's just a bad matchup for the Panther secondary because the Cardinals have so many weapons and you can't stick Josh
right.
Norman on all of them.
I guess my point is more because I agree with you that the Cardinals have so many weapons. That guy needs to be playing at that high level or they're in deep trouble. He can't have a bad game. I mean, they're vulnerable just because the Cardinals have so many weapons. If Palmer is playing like the Palmer we saw for most of the season, it's tough for anybody.
I think also when your secondary's banged up, it can take certain cornerbacks and affect how they are used and how they play too. And they are banged up.
Let's pick the games now. And Mark, you got it going. This is going to be a good one.
All right, this is going to be an amazing game. It's going into overtime in my books, 30-24. The Ooh. Carolina Panthers win at home, but no disrespect to the Cardinals. They're going to bring it. This is going to be a fun one.
All right.
Feel the same way. No disrespect to the Panthers. I have a huge Panthers friend named Rob Kisebeth on Tybee.
He's large.
And he's been disappointed in me.
Like 7 feet tall or?
He's just a big friend. He's a good friend.
Oh, okay.
He's been disappointed in me. It's not that I disrespect the Panthers. I have all the respect in the world for the Panthers. I just respected what the Seahawks have done the past couple of years. And I respect what the Cardinals have done all this year. I'm going to stay with the Cardinals. I do. I respect the Panthers. I like them. They were our team of ATL 2 years ago. I'm going Cardinals 31-30.
This is such a good game. I agree, too. I have no respect for any of the teams just to balance things out. No, I respect them both. I am going to say 31-30, Wes. Panthers win.
Oh, okay.
We're talking that type of game.
Interesting.
I don't get the whole not picking the team of ATL thing. I mean, I would pick them if they have any chance to win. They're the team of ATL. What?
Team of ATL. But
why would we not pick them in every game that they had a chance? I don't get it.
Well, I guess because I feel like as much as I like watching the Cardinals, I think Carolina's going to win.
And also, why would you pick anything after you abandoned us in the picks this season? Where's the burlap sack is my question.
That's fair. I guess my other thing is we obviously have no clue what's going to happen, so you might as well pick the team that you want to root for and the team that has a great chance to win. Cardinals win 34-31.
Dan wants to root for the Panthers now. What score do you have?
34-31.
Oh, okay.
Are the Cardinals creed bombing at practice?
No, but they do.
Will you check me high?
Do the Panthers have white wacky hijinks with quarterback competitions where they have Gatorade
chaps?
Yeah,
it's cute.
I just caught Dan's bronchitis.
Yeah, well.
The look on Greg's face during that minute of song.
My sacrifice. All right, before we get out of here, let's quickly, it's time to put your sandwich where your mouth is. Ooh, I like that. Go get my lunch, you piece of common street trash.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
Wow. Want me to go first? That was gross,
sorry.
Dan. All right. Here's my first one. Brady,
to those that are new to the game.
We only have one, right?
Sure.
Yeah. We each throw out a prediction, and then the rest of the room gets to either agree with it or challenge it. Go get my lunch. And if the person that challenges you or persons wins that challenge, you have to buy sandwiches for everyone that disagreed with your assertion.
For more on this game, check out gogetmylunch.org, run by Nick Fortier, a fabulous website.
Absolutely. Okay, Mark, go ahead.
Does a great job. Okay, here it is. Brady and Manning will combine for at least 4 interceptions.
Brady.
I will take you up on that.
Interesting.
Brady and Manning.
At least 4.
4.
Well, 3 means 3 is ridiculous.
Here's the
thing. I'm going 4 because it's... 4 would be notable.
Bill Barnwell wrote a great piece on ESPN that I read last night, to breaking down like what's a league average quarterback. And one of the things that he talked about is like the interception rate in the NFL now is through the floor. Nobody really throws interceptions anymore. I know Peyton Manning threw some this year, so I think that's partly where you're going from, what you're going with there. But I don't think Tom Brady's going to throw a pick, and I don't think that Peyton Manning's going to melt down wildly. So I'm going to take you on that.
Cool.
I will take you on it, too. I feel like 3 is probably the right over-under, so I'm going
to
go.
3 would have been – I would have been told it was boring, so I had
to good.
Add to
you're right.
It.
Yep.
That was a good – like,
you're right.
Your usual even Steven in this game. You're taking some chances, Wes.
Cardinals wide receiver trio of Larry Fitzgerald, John Brown, and Michael Floyd will have more yards than the entire Denver Broncos offense.
That is interesting.
Let's hear it again.
The wide receiver trio of Larry Fitzgerald, John Brown, and Michael Floyd will have more total yards than the entire Denver Broncos offense.
Well,
net yards.
I don't want to be rooting for the Broncos offense to have any yards, but I guess I'll forget about this silly sandwich prop, and I'll take you up on it.
I'll definitely take you up.
I will, too.
Just out of principle.
All right. Reeled them in.
Wow. All right.
Mine are going to be conflicting, but go ahead.
Total yards. So all the running.
Net yards.
All the receiving.
That includes yards lost to
That's going
to
be close.
Oh, okay.
You can get negative yards if you lose sack yards.
That's a good one. Here is mine. Let me pull it up. Excuse me. Bear with me. Here we go. Cam Newton, he is the Panthers quarterback, I guess, will have more total touchdowns, that is both passing, running, and receiving potentially, than Gronk, Edelman, and Amendola combined.
More touchdowns?
Yes. I like a low-scoring game in New England, and I like Cam Newton doing some things, so that's why I did this.
I'm not going to bother. I'm not going
to
take it.
I'm not going to
I mean, I'm not going to take it.
Okay.
I'm not going to take it.
Okay.
I actually am also not going to, based
everything.
On what my second sandwich thing would have been.
The odds,
I think a huge day for Cam Newton is coming.
I mean, the odds are heavily favoring Dan. He scored 45 touchdowns.
Heavily?
Here. Oh, yeah.
Gronk, Edelman.
They scored 20 or whatever, even if they were healthy.
Well, it could be Brandon Bolden that scores 3 touchdowns.
It could be James White.
So I'm not going to take it.
Well, I was just testing the love fest of this room for Tom Brady, that's all.
Yeah.
I think he'll win. It may be through people we don't even talk about
true.
On this
that's
podcast
a fair
today.
Point.
I'm not only carrying the Patriots' water, I'm carrying a huge torch for Tom Brady as a football player.
Good for you, Wes.
And I'm still not taking it.
Oh, bad job.
Well, Dan
cowards
got,
all
Dan got,
among
Dan
me.
Dan got what he wanted, you know?
Oh, yeah, no, this works out. And I feel like that was fair, but nobody took me up.
It was a good one.
There you go. Deal with it, Greg.
Mine is pretty similar to Wes's.
Snore.
And it's just that Carson Palmer is going to have more yards from scrimmage than Cam Newton. You know, the whole
– Yards from scrimmage.
The whole Cam
– Well
– You get Cam's rushing
you get
and his
rushing.
Passing.
Yep.
Versus Palmer's passing, essentially.
Well,
you never know.
I will take you up, meaning that I think Cam's going to have more.
Right. If you're picking the Panthers, you
know, I'll take you up. I think
chance.
It's going to happen.
Cam will have more yards than Carson Palmer.
Right.
Yeah, I think you will.
Okay. So you'll take me.
Yeah, I'll take you.
No, I'm saying Carson Palmer will have more.
I'm saying Carson Palmer will have more, too.
So you too. All right. That's kind of how I figured it would happen.
Wow. So we got a lot of chomping going on here.
That was a rousing game.
Yeah.
Go get my lunch.
That sound bite is still hideous.
I had actually made up a what's more likely before they told me I totally,
so did I.
Totally had blown it.
Wow.
You were not alone.
It was.
Come on, guys.
I think it was like Peyton Manning interceptions versus the amount of like Peyton Manning throws 3 interceptions or the dabbing in Carolina is at 2 or less. Only
mine,
2 or less dabs for the whole game.
Mine was Peyton Manning wins the game.
I don't know why I'm throwing this out.
What's more likely, Peyton Manning wins this game or I become a millionaire by Sunday night?
Wow.
Think about what's going to happen, by the way. If the Panthers win this game, the sideline celebration, like the giant photo, the Cam Newton. You know how many angry housewives there will be in this country?
Oh, my God. Housewives, please calm down with your letters.
My goodness. All right. So there you go. So And for the record, I just went the entire ATN group with Connor and Patra. Across the board, we went 6 across the board in favor of the Patriots.
Wow.
In terms of the Panthers, Cardinals, we all took the Panthers with the exception of Wes and Greg. So there you have it. We can't wait. Here's the good thing, Greg. Now we get to watch it. We get to see what happens.
I can't wait.
Best thing about sports.
I got that feel. You know, I got that feeling. I mean, these are big. These are the moments you look for as a fan. You get excited. You're starting to count the hours towards that game. The only thing that's annoying is they start the games at 3 o'clock. Why do you make up new time for games in the biggest weekend of the year?
Too late. Right.
Stupid.
I mean, it's not going to change now. There's no sense belly aching over it.
Just move the times.
When you are with me, I'm free. I'm helpless as a bee.
We are losing listeners rapidly.
I'm no longer accepting your Cade Bomby. I'm turning my back on you.
We'll be back on Sunday night. That's what we do. Right after the NFC title game to talk about both these games. It will be a bad situation for – maybe we could cut this for the show on Sunday. It will be a bad situation for Mark and Wes, because Peyton Manning is going to have the game of his life in a wild spot, and you guys won't be able to talk.
I have a feeling I'll get through it.
Yeah, for Mark and Wes, I'll have to deal with your clownish behavior.
No, I won't. Here's my solemn promise to you. I will not be a jerk.
I don't care. I'll deal with it. You got to deal with it.
If you would have been a jerk after the Jet loss in Week 17, I would have buried you if the Patriots would have lost. But I will. I have respect for fandom. I won't do that. There might be a throw and a sleaze drop. That's all.
Too crazy.
Peyton Manning wins and does well. Mark and I will be happy for him.
I agree. Dan is turning this into something that it's not. That it is not.
That's
funny. To be honest, I mean
a joke. A Chip Kelly like joke to end the show.
He has to play well in order to earn our respect, though.
Well, let's see what
happens. I want the best Super Bowl matchup, and that doesn't include Denver's offense at this stage in my mind. Change my mind.
Until Peyton Manning shreds.
Change my mind. You've been saying this all year about Peyton Manning.
When's the last time he shredded anything?
2013, like week 14. It was awesome.
One of the sandwiches you lost is saying that he was going to throw 30 touchdowns. So,
well, you want to go through sandwich bets now.
Sure, I do. I said that Osweiler would have at least one start.
How about some of that Parmesan cheese he's been shredding?
That's the only thing.
Chicken parm, you know what I'm saying?
I don't get it. No, I do. Yeah, we'll be back on Sunday. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the boss, and La Seed behind the glass. Come on, Peyton. Till Sunday.